Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today on September 11, 2009, I am delighted to welcome serial entrepreneur and blogger, perhaps best known for Seismic, or for his phrase, advertising, PR, and marketing suck, Loïc Lemire. Welcome, Loïc.
Hello, Jennifer. I can see you starting really in a great way. I like it. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good. So I did give you a heads up that I was going to mention the phrase. And when I say the phrase is advertising, PR, and marketing suck. And I hope that doesn't bother you that I started with that. But I think it's really honest, and I like that because I think a lot of people think that way, but they don't say it. And the more people perhaps feel, you know, able to say these things, the more these industries can perhaps get better. I know that the San Francisco Marketing Association recently held an event inspired by your very phrase, and that you were previously involved with an interactive agency that was acquired. So I wanted to ask you, can you tell us more about how the phrase came about and what you mean by it?
Yeah, I think it's, well, first I like to be provocative, so I don't want to become the number one enemy of all PR and marketing professionals. That's really not my goal, especially since lots of them actually use Seismic, our tool, so that wouldn't be very smart.
Yes, they do.
But I like to, let's say when I speak at events, I like to get some attention from the audience at the beginning. So yes, it has been a slide that I've been using for a few months in my presentation about how important it is to build a community, I think, around yourself if you're an individual. You see these days the best way to find a job is to have friends around you who help you. And so it's the same with brands. Brands are starting just now to realize that it's much more important to have a community around them that help them. That's the 1,000 fans that Seth Godin is talking so well in his book Tribe, that I really advise you to read if you haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Or those are the trust agents that Chris Brogan is also defining very well in his latest book that I'm talking about. And those, you know, this first circle of friends, of fans, whatever you want to call them, this community, is really so much more important than PR and traditional PR and marketing and advertising. My point here is really to say, when I say it sucks, it actually really does suck. Because I think we've been used to the fact that brands lie to us. And that's just at the core of PR and marketing, I'm sorry to say, that you present the brands
right.
You present the brands in a way that is only good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you always, you know, you never address the negative, always the positive. You push the quality of a product too much. And then, therefore, you lie in a way. Of course, lie is a big word. Suck is a big word. But that's kind of what everybody got used to it. And the brands that make a difference these days are the ones who do the opposite, who are honest, who talk about their problems, who, like Tony Hsia at Zappos, recommends competitors if they don't have a product. And I think it's an entire new world that is growing.
Oh, absolutely. I think, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think what I wonder about, though, is, so advertising, PR, and marketing, what about branding firms? Because I feel like the big, big brands like Pepsi and Coke that should, in our view, as social experts or people that are out there in the social realm, we're all about, you know, we believe what Chris Brogan says, and we agree that, you know, Seth Godin's, you know, book Tribes is the way to go about business today, and that's actually what people are coming to expect. But I feel like there is a segment that really rely on these branding companies that are also sort of redefining themselves, because I think that PR, advertising, and marketing are also kind of redefining themselves. What do you think of brand agencies?
I agree. I mean, the professionals adapt themselves very quickly to that new world, and they get the communities, and more also advertising agencies, you know, get that. But my point is really that I think they still, like, you know, just deliver too much, like, product information only. It's not only about creating a fans page on Facebook and throwing your product information in there, but it's, I mean, you know what I mean, and all your listeners know what I mean. It's really about engaging and creating a conversation that can be honest and direct and not hiding any problem under the carpet. And video is also a very good way to do that because it's probably more transparent. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, it's like, let's not push too much what I said. I didn't say all the professionals don't get it. Far from it. Many, many people do. Not only the so-called social media experts, but many professionals, you know, do get it, and that's great. And I think it's all moving. Having said that, there are still too few brands that really engage with us. As Chris said in his book, you know, people who are one of us or not. You know, his distinction between do you get it or not is very big. I think many brands now read what's being said on Twitter, read what's being said, obviously, on Google blog search, but very few actually answer and start this conversation. And I think we'll get there, but we are still naming the same examples, you know, Comcast and Dell and, you know, Ford. We have a few examples like that, but it's still too few. So hopefully it changes.
When was the last time you were surprised by a brand? Because I agree with you. The same case studies or examples have been given for the last probably almost 6 months, I'd say. And that's a very long time in our world. So have any brand surprised you recently?
Yeah. Recently, for the fun of it, I was very surprised by Bing, the Microsoft search engine. I don't know why I was doing that. You know, I never do that generally. But when Bing launched, obviously, right, you will trust me. But when Bing launched on a Sunday night, which was a weird hour to open, but at 11 p.m. or something, they launched, and I saw a tweet. That's how I learned it, and I go to Bing, and I don't know why. I make a few searches, and obviously I fall into the ego trap, type my name, try it, and then I tap sex. Don't ask me why, but I did that just to see what happened. And then they have this, and then they had this, check this box if you're more than 18 years old, of course, which I did, and you end up into a porn, really, site. I mean, like, amazing, all those videos and so on, directly available on the search engine. I tweeted that, and it went all over the place, on TechMeme, on TechCrunch, everywhere. I had no idea it would, obviously, hurt my brand so much. And I was surprised because not only Bing replied almost instantly on Twitter itself, but also very high-end, very high executives at Microsoft started to engage with me over Twitter. And that was a lot of fun because when you think about it, it's Sunday midnight, right? And in a matter of minutes, you get not only the brands, but also the management of a company the size of Microsoft starting to engage with you. I think it's great. I was thrilled. And even more when 2 or 3 weeks ago, they actually changed the way it worked because of all that conversation around that. And I think it's a great proof that, you know, there is no difference between now your walking time and your home time. I think it's all connected, obviously. There is not much difference between your personal image and your business image. It has to be consistent because if you try to make yourself look great in business and then you appear, you know, like, I don't know, drunk, smoking dope all the time on Facebook, it might not be a good idea. And which I'm pushing the envelope, of course. But you see what I mean? It was all concentrated in one. And then I was not expecting any kind of interaction with Microsoft, and I thought it was great that they, and now I actually stayed in touch with many of them, and it happens more and more, which I like. I think we'll see more and more cases. So Microsoft for me is now in the category of a brand that really engaged, and that's cool.
So Seismic, that's how I came to know who you were. It's probably been a couple of years now since I first heard your name. As a serial entrepreneur, before we start talking specifically about Seismic, how do you know sort of what and when to invest in or create, and where do you get your inspiration? Because one of the things that I loved when I originally saw you doing it, I think it was in a video context, is, and I remember pointing this as an example at a company that I was at, saying this is the kind of energy and enthusiasm that people want to see. It's intoxicating. People are driven or drawn to it. So can you answer that question? What gives you that inspiration, and how do you know where to invest your money, your time, your effort?
That's a very good question. In terms of energy and enthusiasm, many friends of mine always tell me that I always look happy and smiling. And
you do. You're in almost every picture. You're smiling.
Well, that's just how I am. If you meet me, if we meet, and I hope we do in real time, in real life, you'll see I'm just like that. Even if it's tough, and frankly, the last year has not been the best in my life, as you know, and for everyone, I think for everyone,
it's
I do adapt plans and change plans, and adapt to the current situation. And but still, I think we only live once, so I just like what I do, and I think passion is the most important driver you can have, and I'm obsessed with doing things which I like, and I do Sysmic, and I adapt it, as you know, based on two things. One is what we hear from our users, and there is nothing that makes my day more than like yesterday I went to a networking event, and I met a bunch of our users totally randomly who came to me and said they loved the product, with suggestions, and that's the best you can get as an entrepreneur is users and passion, and even criticism about the product is fine because it means people care, and I guess that's my main driver. But then for innovation, obviously you cannot only rely on what you read and the feedback you get. We get a lot of feedback. If you search Sysmic on Twitter, you will see.
Mm-hmm.
I try to read it all myself. That's the first thing I do in the morning. But it's not only, obviously, we try to innovate. And then, it's like being an entrepreneur is tough because you have to not only innovate right, but also innovate at the right time. And
mm-hmm.
I think in terms of what we did with video was, is too early, is very innovative. Like nobody had done that conversation video before. And we didn't have enough people who used it to justify a business. So that's why I changed Sysmic into what it is today. I think one of the best tools around to build your community. And we keep the video, but you see, it's very tough because sometimes you have to listen to not only your energy and your enthusiasm, but also make it work at that current times. I think the video conversation will work, but like in 3 to 5 years. And, if as an entrepreneur you don't adapt, then you fail because if you're too early, it doesn't work. So I don't know. Enthusiasm, I don't know. I just do what I like. Right now I'm helping my wife Geraldine prepare the web, our event in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And that's lots of fun as well. So how can I not be happy about that?
So Le Web is an event held in Europe. Where is it held this year?
It's held in Paris every year in December 9 and 10. It's the web.
What location?
It's called Le 104, which is a 19th century building, which very much looks like the Ferry Building in San Francisco with transparent glass ceiling. It's beautiful. You can see a video at leweb.net. We have 2,000 people from 35 countries joining every year, and it took us 6 years to do that without any PR, marketing, or advertising.
Yeah, it's great, and I think a lot of people don't know about it, so I think it's worth checking out, and obviously most of your events you provide a video stream of, which I think is great. You even had a product discussion a couple or a few months back where you had a live stream version available to people. So I think that there's a couple things. One, if most people listening are American, it's a great way to get some insight into the way that other countries are innovating and the way they use different gadgets, tools, computers, especially mobile. But it's also a great insight into, what the next thing might be here with all of our masses of people. So I encourage that. One thing I wanted to get back to is I think, the idea of Sysmic originally of being a video conversation, just kind of a side note on what you think of the integration of 12seconds.tv into TweetDeck.
Well,
do you think that's working
or
not? I mean, obviously 12seconds.tv is a very different kind of operation than what you were going for. And it's, you know, it's so, much, I don't think it ever was going to be as grand as, I probably shouldn't say too much because who knows where it's going. But I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that integration.
Well, you know, we had done that earlier on Twill. Exactly the same. As you know, we have Twill, which was one of the most popular Twitter clients.
I have to say, I still go back to Twirl. I love it. I'm going to be so sad when it goes away. I'm trying to wean myself off.
It won't go away. I don't know what put this in your mind or in people's mind.
I need to go to the new thing. I think it's my own. Go ahead.
That doesn't mean it will go away.
Yeah, but I think I need to, you know, if I'm telling people that they should use Seismic because it's better, and it is, it is much easier to use than Twirl now. And I have to say, huge kudos to you because one of the early criticisms you actually turned around into one of the best, in my opinion, uses of the application, which is switching between accounts. Really,
right.
Really easy to do on, and including Facebook, on Seismic as opposed to other applications. So I'm trying to wean myself off Twirl because it's a little harder to use. And if you're on a PC, forget it. You can't go and look at all of your windows and find which account you want to use. So that's my own personal story. But anyway, wanted to get your thoughts on the integration of any video application or video API into a application for
Facebook, as I was saying, we did it very early and earlier than those two players you've quoted in Twill. And there is video in Twill and Seismic video support. So I think it's a good idea to do it. But as I already said somewhere, it's unfortunately not getting the traction that many people hoped, and including several other video players, which in this social video space that I think Seismic helped create. And that's disappointing because obviously we had a lot of plans and I think it will come back, and I think 12 seconds is doing a great job at it. I think we did a great job at it, but it's not growing as fast as it should, just for human reasons. It's people are, you know, you're not used to do video. It requires more of anyone. It requires, you know, concentration, it's your image, you have some people are shy. So, yeah, but so that's okay. It's called entrepreneurship.
So what about other markets? I mean, they've been doing things like this in Japan for a long time, certainly other countries. Are those opportunities that you seek, or are you really focused on either the North American or U.S. market?
Well, I'm French, so I cannot...
That's what I'm wondering.
You're right. I cannot. No, if you. So we launched a very exciting website, which I hope you check out, called Seismic Web, which is available on seismic.com. And if you go there, you will log in with your Twitter credential. You don't need anything else than your than authorizing us on Twitter. And this is the web-based version of Seismic Desktop, which doesn't have that many bells and whistles yet, so we're like catching up and adding them as fast as we can. But it's very interesting because you have absolutely zero download there. It works instantly. And we will get to, you know, multiple accounts and everything that Seismic Desktop has and Facebook for the support, but it will take us a few weeks. But if you go there, you will see we already have English, French, Chinese, Dutch, German Dutch, and Romanian, and we will add three or four more languages next week, one of which being Japanese. We'll have Portuguese, we'll have Spanish. So yes, international is very important for us. And the reason why we do the web first is that it's just much easier for us to do it on the web-based version and then update it than on Seismic Desktop. I'm not saying Seismic Desktop won't get internationalized, but for French and like already Chinese and, you know, some other German users, they can already get it in their own language there. So yes, it's very important for us.
And I think that it answers one of the, Augie Ray, one of the people I've had on the show before who has experienced the blog, a blog I personally happen to love. One of his criticisms of applications in general was that you couldn't store your settings globally. So as you go from computer to computer, you can't save them. But with the web-based application, of course, that allows you to just need some sort of browser interface and you're fine on whatever computer you're using. So it adds, it answers that question of, you know, how do you make it keep your settings universally. It answers that for people that might have been critical of the product for that reason too.
Right. I agree.
Obviously positive for the product. Positive for the product.
Thank you.
One of the things I want to ask you about, obviously, is, and I think that you've been great in terms of transparency about, like I said, the product piece, because a lot of times when I talk to business people specifically, or even technologists, you know, the product roadmap is sort of the hidden gem that they don't want to talk about. But let's talk about it more broadly in terms of the space that you're in and kind of the innovations that you see coming in the next 6 months to a year. What do you see as, you know, really driving the market space as far as ways to connect with Twitter, Facebook? You know, I mean, you're kind of, in a way, you're dashboardizing a common complaint people have, which is, how do I manage all these accounts, by bringing Twitter and Facebook together. But what do you see, you know, in terms, you know, of what your product roadmap tells you, what your feedback tells you, as things that either your company or others will be doing in the next six months to 12 months?
Well, I think it's about being available in several forms, so in different screens. So we're already available on through desktop, on PC, Mac, and Unix. We're already also available on web-based, which makes it very, very broad, especially mm-hmm. for people sometimes working in companies, they cannot install something there. We have announced that we will have an iPhone version very soon, which we are finishing right now. And apart from that, it's all about making those apps talk together very well. You know, pretty much like Gmail does, where regardless of where you use Gmail, you have a very similar experience. That's the objective we have. And in terms of roadmap, you know, it's pretty easy. We have a very active feedback forum, which is on feedback.sysmic.com, which where people leave their suggestions about the product, and mm-hmm. they are kind enough to even vote for the ones they prefer, pretty much in a big like format. So we know what they want. We know what our users want. We deliver that, and that's easy. It's public. It's all there. So, you know, I don't know, things like groups on the website is in high demand, obviously, which is the same on Sysmic Desktop. So we will add that, and we'll improve the way they are done. I think groups are very important because you start following, of course, a lot of people. You need to group them better. Then it's a few surprises that we'll have before the end of the year. But if I would disclose them now, they wouldn't be surprises anymore.
That's true.
So I won't. But we are preparing a few things which I think will surprise a lot of people, and we're very excited about them. So I think the challenge is really, and we're delivering it, is to not only obviously deliver what the users want, which is again all public, it's on the web. And we do that. We release every other week or so. We have a very, very fast release cycle based on that feedback. And then surprise them with other things, which hopefully we think they will like. And so expect, you know, one or two big news coming from us, which is not expected, not announced before the end of the year.
Well, it looks like we've already generated some transparency here. I have somebody tweeting that they're in the caller queue, want to ask you a question. Do you mind if we take a call?
You know, I would be so happy. I am happy to take any question, any conversation we can have with our with your listeners and our users. Yeah.
Welcome to the A-list. Who do we have on the line? Are they still there? Hello? Well, they tweeted in, they were talking about, let's see.
So I didn't know that. Actually, you might like remind them that they can call in, right, and ask questions.
Of course, they can call in. And what they were asking about was Sci-Fi Chrome, that they were tracking you. And
yeah.
They didn't leave what their question was. But I'll leave the mic open in case they come back to the line. But
okay.
In terms of, you know, you were talking about earlier Microsoft surprising you because they've tracked you. Obviously, somebody else is calling in with a similar kind of situation. Throughout your life, have you felt like you've kind of been tracked? Or, I mean, when I read your bio, and your bio is available on my website, jenniferlindsay.com, which you can get to through Blog Talk Radio's interface, you know, you have a Global Leader Award from the World Economic Forum. You're obviously a high-level achiever. How have you kept yourself going, and how do you, you know, achieve things like that?
You mean in general?
Yeah, in general.
That's a very broad question.
Well, I mean, first of all, what is the young? Tell us what the young. I think it's Young Leader or Young Global Leader Award from World Economic Forum.
I have not made up that name, but they have a program for young, not only entrepreneurs, but also NGOs, social entrepreneurs, and young politicians that they select a few people every year that I'm very honored to be a member of. It's chaired by the Queen Rania of Jordan. And so it's a fantastic network to be in. And some of them get to go to the World Economic Forum in Davos, their main annual event, which I've been lucky enough to participate for the last 9 years. So in this specific case, so it's a great network. What can I say? It's a place where everybody is more important than you. And it's very humbling, obviously. and you learn a lot. So the way I do it, you know, is very simple. You should ask them, obviously. But the way I do it is I always try to add value first myself to help.
Mm-hmm.
And cool things happen after. I'm surprised how many people, you know, beg all the time. And begging is not right. I think you should help first. And,
sure.
And then you collect, right? But that sounds obvious, but, you know, like just yesterday, I won't quote their name, but I was amazed. I had one of the largest companies in the world calling me to partner with Le Web. I'm like, sure, yeah. You know, Serge Alim took the call, and I was in it, and we talked. And basically what they wanted is free passes and a speaker, of course. You know, why not? And that's what they call adding value.
Right.
And so you see what I mean? It's like, who are you? I don't know you. You know, you contact us first to, you know, like, and they don't know, of course, anything about how the event is done. The event is entirely financed by us. It's barely breaking even. It's not, you know, really a business. And you see what I mean? It's like, and you are this company, which is a huge multinational. That's wrong. That's just what I'm saying. So with the World Economic Forum in Davos, well, first, they, like, I don't know, saw the price and so on. And so I think this is all coming from my blogging that I was at the time one of the seen as, you know, the French blogger, basically. And that helped me. So that starts by sharing a lot online like you're doing right now. That starts by helping people, sharing with people. And when I got into that program, the first thing I was obsessed by was to remain and help them and add value, because I got so much value out of that, connections, and
mm-hmm.
That's where I got to know one of my investors, Nicolas Enstrom, the founder of Skype, mm-hmm. and so many others. And
mm-hmm.
so what I did is I helped them forward to, you know, social software issues. So I launched their blog in 2004, the Davos World Economic Forum blog, And then I help them identify interesting people that they should probably invite. And we became friends with the team there, and they trust me. And just yesterday, I suggested someone that they should consider inviting. And you see, I'm always trying to help. And if you do that consistently, people notice and pay attention, and one day they help you too. So I think that's very simple, and it always works.
I could not agree with you more. I think, you know, I constantly go back to my experience in the Peace Corps. I had, you know, I personally had been on television, you know, which in this country seems to be, ooh, you're on television as a reporter, and that was a dream of mine. And I ended up wanting to help kids after that. And so, you know, went off on this tangent, but I come back to it all the time, and I've written about it on my blog, and I actually had my mother-in-law, who's in Northern England, write an email to me the other day saying, you know, we just saw your blog post on this, and now we understand why it relates to so many things in your life. And it's so true that, you know, you get this sense of, God, we have so much. We should be giving back, and it puts you in a different mindset, I think.
Yep, I agree.
And
I think that comes through. It's always my obsession.
It definitely comes through with you, because there's something different about the way that you approach your work. You know, as I said in the early videos, you really captured me with the way that you were inspired, or seemed so inspired by what you were working on at the time, and you've since, you know, changed course. But you did that in a way that was felt very natural. It didn't feel like, oh, we stopped, we're not seeing the demand here, so we're going to move to something else. How do you deal, you know, you seem like a very positive person, and you contribute and you look at things from a point of view of contributing a lot. What do you do with disappointment, which is, you know, really part of business?
Disappointment.
Whether it's
individual
disappointment, and you know that something's not working, and that maybe you can't figure out a way to save it or change it, or with individual people that you work with that you feel aren't as committed, perhaps,
right,
as you are, because you're one of those rare leaders where you're extremely committed, whereas a lot of leaders that I talk to are the opposite. They are very removed. So how do you deal with that aspect?
I think failure and being disappointed is just part of what we do, and it's something that should, you know, I think we should accept failure as something we do daily. I mean, I fail on something, and accept it and even talk about it. I actually even heard about an event that was, I have not heard back, but like recently they wanted to invite me to talk about failures in public, because people know that
FailCon.
I do that too. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we had the organizer of FailCon on a few weeks ago, Cassie Phillips, so yeah.
So yeah, that's what I'm talking about, and I think it's great, because especially in Europe, actually, the culture is that you always hide that, and you can't, you know. And I think I'm just doing the opposite. I mean, you can see in my videos when I talk openly about the video service didn't take off as we thought, and it's still up there on sysme.tv. And also when I had to, you know, change the size of my company and stop producing content, it's been extremely tough and difficult, but I've been open about it, and it's also there in video, and it created lots of conversations. But I think that's the way to go long term. And being disappointed is just, you know, if you're disappointed by yourself, then you should fix it. But if it's, you know, things you do and you fail, it's just totally normal. You should fail as fast as possible, so that you know fast and then correct, and not stay in that failure, obviously.
I think that's good inspiration for a lot of people who feel,
yeah,
you know, there can be that sort of, Schadenfreude, you know, that the English have. So my husband has a little bit of that, and I tell him, you know, knock it off, you know, in America, anything is possible. But, you know, you do see that. You see the sort of jealousy or envy pieces start to come about, and that doesn't help with the, you know, innovative spirit that, you know, something like a new company or a new venture needs to have, you know, through and through to keep it, to keep it moving, to keep it innovating, and keep it interesting, certainly.
Exactly. So then, as it comes to people, I'm lucky enough to work with a great team who is very motivated, and I just like, of course, people who have passion. That's my number one, you know. And I think everyone in our team loves what they do and love to see our users being so happy about it or so passionate about it. Even when they're not happy, they try to fix it. You see what I mean? And
yeah,
and yeah, of course, you know, it happens. We push things as fast as we can. We try to have the best quality possible, but sometimes there are things which don't go as we thought, and that's okay. It's just normal. The number one thing to do is to admit it in public, and then correct it. And I think people are happy with that. If you try to deny it, then it's really bad. But failure is part of the game. It's I think it's like PR and marketing suck thing. It's the same. It's like thinking that most companies do only good things and succeed all the time, and same with people, even big achievers. You know, we all have our problems and failures and bad days, and it's okay. It's just normal. Let's go through them. And you know, I used to do lots of sailing when I was younger, and when you do sailing races, sometimes the wind changes direction, and what can you do? You have to suffer and go through it and keep going. There is no way you can cross the Atlantic by going straight, which I have not done. I would love to cross the Atlantic sailing.
That would be fun. You know, I think of one of my favorite stories this week, you know, in terms of the social and gaming space, and it was actually about Harmonix, who are one of the creators of Rock Band, or the lead creator, I guess, of Rock Band. And Rock Band Beatles, of course, just came out this week. We pre-ordered it. It came. We were really excited about it. And that actually was a failure initially. They were too early to market with some of their concepts, and yet they've created Guitar Hero and Rock Band in the gaming world, which have been huge. Of course, you know, widely debated. But I wonder, you know, in terms of industry trends, if you weren't doing and working on Seismic, what part of the tech industry might you want to work in? You ever feel jealous, like, ooh, that person gets to work in doing this part of the industry or this kind of job?
You know what? I'm not jealous, never, ever, because I hate people who are jealous. I think it's a very bad feeling to have. So I'm not jealous, but I admire many people I would love to work with. And one of them is Richard Branson. And so since you ask, I would love to work in those projects around space and sending people to space, because I think that's like just kick-ass. You know, it's something I hope I can do in my lifetime. Right now it's still a bit expensive. But
yeah.
but being able to see the Earth from above and see the Earth as a whole from space is something I really hope I can see one day, and my kids can see. And I would love to walk in that. You know, like, I think it requires being a little bit crazy. It requires also Richard Branson is someone whose personality I admire very much, because. Well,
yeah.
He's, you know, he could show up in a wedding suite in and take a bath in the Trocadéro in Paris. He could, you know, I mean, you know him, and that's really like the kind of personality that I really like. So, see, this is no jealousy, but this is someone I would love to work or collaborate with. But then in terms of sectors, I think space is fantastic, but then talk to me about revenue. That wouldn't be short-term revenue.
Right.
The other one, I think the biggest opportunity these days, which is a lot of fun too, is all around clean technology. It's just starting what Chai Agassi is doing right now with the full electric car, which will hopefully drive soon in San Francisco.
Hydrogen. I'm a big hydrogen-fueled car person.
Right, but you're still burning something.
Yeah, well, it's true, but it's renewable. And also, yeah, I have this whole thing about electric cars because the best electric cars can't drive through the whole state of California without recharging for something like 24 hours. So I think Tesla has the closest one. I'm a big Top Gear fan, so I see them test these cars out. But yeah, I think, you know, I think just learning more about the auto industry for the average person to be able to make choices and go, you know, this, you know, what are the trade-offs? Just like you said, but that's still burning something. You know, that's a clever reply because you actually know what you're talking about.
Well, I don't know that much what I'm talking about in that matter, but I'd love to, if I wasn't doing Sismic, which is not going to happen anytime soon, because when I like it too, I have everything, the team and the investors that I need to, and the users that I need to make it happen. And now even the traction, so that's great. But I think I would definitely be following clean tech. I think actually that's something I love to share, is always ideas of businesses to do, which my blog readers like sometimes, because I actually helped indirectly create a few companies, like Julio Alonso, who is in Spain, got the idea of number one blogging network in Spain from me talking about Jason Calacat in Squareblog Sync. That was 5-6 years ago, and now he's one of the biggest media in Spain. And anyway, I'm getting lost here. But the,
no, that's fantastic,
Self-satisfying myself. But yeah, I share a lot of ideas too. And anyway, I would do. There is not TechCrunch for clean tech. You see what I mean?
There
is no. There is no blog, place, podcast, whatever, where you go and is the absolute reference to follow what's happening with how we can improve the world with clean technology, and in non-technical terms, because it can get pretty scientific and technical. Right. And I think that's one. I mean, you know, if someone is listening here and looking for a project, I think that would be a very cool one, just starting with a blog and following very closely, and that could, you know, end up being as big as TechCrunch is today. I think someone should do a Clean Tech Crunch. I should tell Michael about that.
I think Michael will definitely pick up on it at some point if he hasn't already got it in his noodle at the moment. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing to me when I used to work at an agency, and one of the clients is Fujitsu America, who has this huge, huge commitment to clean tech, and they don't do it. They don't really do it for publicity. It's not part of their orchestrated campaigns or efforts. They just do it because, I guess, they feel from a corporate level it's the right thing to do. Tremendous story there. You know, as someone who went to journalism school and was a journalist for more than a decade, I go, wow, that is such a great story. And no one really picks up on it. So I think there's just, as you said, there's so many just untapped stories even to fuel a blog like that, dedicated, that people don't realize. I mean, they could start with the Computer History Museum, I think, in Mountain View, and get, you know, some good insight on where the stories really lie, because I think they're completely unearthed. People just don't know.
Right.
So I'm guessing that the event you were at yesterday was GigaOm's Mobilize 09.
No, I missed that. Huh. No. I was invited by.
What were you at yesterday?
I was invited by Motorola to a meeting with the CEO, and there was a lot of people around, cool guys, to
fantastic
see the latest Android phone from Motorola, and it was good fun.
Great. Well, the reason that I asked you that was obviously you go to a lot of public events. And your face is, as I said, your smiling face is everywhere. You've now been in Newsweek as one of the most important people on the web, or some variation of that. It's, again, on my blog if you want to take a look at it. It's the closest I've ever seen you to not smiling. It's like you're kind of smiling, but your mouth is shut. So it's a great photo, at least, to see of you. But, I mean, great honor, wonderful, wonderful accolades. So more and more people, obviously, mainstream people, are going to know who you are. Do people come up to you with questions yet and ask you kind of things that may seem odd or off the wall? Anything interesting that anyone's asked you, just coming up to you, knowing who you are?
Well, you know, it's more about, and I feel really bad about it, but my mail is full every day of entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs who, you know, ask how you raise funding and so on. So I try to answer as much as I can by blogging about it. A little less these days just because I'm so focusing on Sismic that it's tough for me. But it's more like that, you know. You can feel that there are many, many people, and it's great, who want to start a business. And they ask that's the kind of questions I'm getting, which is good because, you know, I like answering them. But if I do that too much, then I cannot, you know, make Sismic a success. So it's about finding a balance. But that's the questions I'm getting.
So what kind of questions so people are asking about how to get funding. Generally, what would you say to them then? Does it depend on the stage of their company? Because there's so many resources, it seems like, in the Bay Area where whether it's VC Task Force or others where people can learn more information. Do you send them to a particular site a lot or to a particular organization to help them kind of learn and navigate the way funds are raised here?
Not really. I generally send them to the business angels I know in case it's interesting for them.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I help them. But otherwise, I always tend to tell them that you can also achieve a lot without funding, right? Look at, Tweety, which is a great iPhone application, no funding. And Lauren is doing a lot of revenues with it because he sells it. So there's a lot that can be done these days. And I always insist on that. But like the iPhone, I think the iPhone marketplace is very interesting. These days, it's another place where you can actually, you don't need funding, right? What you need is to know how to code. So if you don't know how to code yourself, you could learn. Or if you're non-technical, you could also partner with an engineer and like share, you know, half of the shares, whatever, to find a deal. I think the mobile market is really, really interesting these days. It's going to change completely. When you see the devices, we really have the internet in the pocket. The good news is people seem to be ready to pay. So that's good. The App Store is said to be around $2 billion market. So, you know, that's significant. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to tell them is that they should really focus on execution and get the initial traction. When you get the initial traction, you always get people interested in doing things with you, whether it's investing or just, you know, customers as well. And that works pretty well.
So as we wrap up here, I want to ask you, do you remember what your original business idea was and how old you were?
I've been driven by always willing to work for myself. That's like a key thing, which mm-hmm. I've been taught by my parents, who were also, I'm saying were because I lost my father, entrepreneurs, and my grandfather was an entrepreneur as well. And, you know, when I mean entrepreneur, they didn't have a multinational company, but I would rather have a shop somewhere. You see what I mean? Be an independent consultant, whatever. But that's just me. So I guess the willingness of being an entrepreneur is something that I've seen my family do so much that I just cannot, you know. And honestly, in the last week, I have two very good friends older than me who spent 20, 30 years in a company and who just got fired and let off. And it's horrible. You know, I'd rather have something small but mine than putting all my passion into someone that could, you know, you see what I mean? You're like, you should control your destiny a little bit.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
But it's not given for everyone. I know that too. Like, it's tougher, obviously. But frankly, I've been shocked by how large companies can get rid of someone who has been giving so much for 20 years. Anyway, I'm getting lost here again. But the second thing is the space itself. I've always been willing to create something in the internet, and the first thing was when my father bought a Macintosh in 1994, and it was very expensive at that time, and I was using it more than they were using it themselves in the company, and I always wanted to create something, and here, there you go, Sismic is one of those things, and it's just a passion to create, and the internet space, well, in 1994, you didn't have the internet before, but the second stage was when I did my first internship in the business school I graduated from in France, which was Texas Instruments in, when was it, 1993. And there I surfed on Mosaic, and I was using Yahoo before it was called Yahoo, which was David Filo and Jerry Young's homepage. And and I was sitting in front of the computer, and I was like, wow. And always wanted to create something around that. So it's not been as big as Yahoo yet, but I'm hopeful.
So is there anything about Sismic that people don't know that would surprise them?
Interesting. No, I think. Well, I don't know. I don't know what people don't know about Sismic, but.
I wanted to end on a note about Sismic, because I think that, okay, as I said, you've put so much passion into this, and we're wrapping the show, and I think that people are always interested in, some behind the scenes. When I used to work in television, people didn't really care as much about what you're reporting as all the things you do to get to the report. So do you code yourself? Do you what would surprise them that you just consider kind of everyday work?
The vision of it is really not a Twitter client. It's really about being the tool to build a community, and I think we'll need that in 5 years and in 10 years. You cannot give yourself as a company a goal to rely only on Twitter or on Facebook. You see what I mean? So
absolutely
the vision is much
yet
broader than that. To answer your question about what they don't know, so many people see us as a Twitter or as a Facebook client, and it's really much broader than that. If it's not Twitter in 3 years, that's fair enough. You will still have the need to have a community around yourself, which is very, very vibrant and active, and it's regardless of where it is. So that's the first thing. And regardless also of the tool. So we started by video a little early, but I think it will be big part of the mix again. It was just too early.
Absolutely. Media content, whether it's user-generated or whether it comes from somebody who produces it, is a huge trend that I'm watching.
Right. And so then the way it's done, I think people have no idea on how tough it is to build those things. That's a good one. That's something that as we build, we keep, understanding. But for example, we have, part of a team which is only testing stuff and using it and testing and correcting. And you have no idea how much, for example, on Sismic Web, how much it's tough when you do a website that is kind of complex already, even though it's some people say, oh, it's just a client, but it's a lot of work to make it work on Chrome, on IE7, IE8, on Firefox, you see what I mean? Like all the browsers, it's like a nightmare. And you cannot imagine. So people generally don't realize. They're like, oh, but how come we don't have that and that and that yet? And in fact, we launched the Sismic Web on July 10th, and we're 2 months away now. There have been hundreds of improvements behind the scenes every single week, which are compatibility with browsers, which are, little improvements everywhere, and that people don't realize. If they would build it, obviously they would realize it. So that's, I think, something that if you want to build something, you realize very fast that it's always more complicated than it seems.
Yeah, it's if you build it, they will come, but they will have comments. So I thank you, Loic Lemire from Seismic, who's also a serial entrepreneur and blogger. I thank you so much for taking the time, and I think providing some really valuable information, not just on the business side, but some insight into Seismic and how you view, and I think we share the view of, you know, tools versus the idea of community moving forward and the need to stay connected. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Jennifer. I had a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thanks for everyone who's listened to this edition of the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Remember to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio. And be sure to turn in next week. We have a double hitter for you. I will speak at noon Pacific on Friday with ComScore Chairman Gian Fulgioni. And then at some point in the week, Veronica Belmont, co-host of Revision 3's Techs. Catch both shows 1 week from today, starting at noon Pacific. And as always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free informational webcasts at jenniferlindsay.com. Have a great weekend.